Good evening. So, as you know, today I'm going to continue this discussion of wise effort that Inez started yesterday. And have this summary, this acronym to help us remember wise effort. P-A-C-K. Prevent unskillful states. Abandon unskillful states. Cultivate skillful states. And keep skillful states. And as I was walking over here, I was thinking, pack. What is pack? Can I do anything creative here? Maybe like packing a lunch. We pack a lunch when we want to prevent getting this new word that I learned recently, hangry. Getting angry and hungry, you know, they go together. For me, that's definitely true. When I'm hungry, my temper gets, you know, I get very irritable. So we pack a lunch to prevent that from getting hungry, angry. It helps us to abandon it. If that has arisen, if it's happened already, we can pull out our lunch, our sandwich, whatever it might be. And packing a lunch is maybe cultivating the skillful, a way of taking care of ourselves, noticing what's going to happen. Today I have a day in which I won't be able to fix a lunch at home or whatever it might be. So we're cultivating the conditions in which we can take care of ourselves, can meet what the day is going to bring us. Then K, keep. Maybe there's a lunch and a snack so that after we have abandoned the hunger, maybe there's a little snack, something to tie us over, to help kind of keep away the hangry and maybe to help cultivate a sense of contentment, some ease, some degree of satisfaction. So that's my creative attempt at using pack. Prevent, abandon, cultivate, and keep. I've also heard Gil Fronsdal, whom perhaps some of you have studied with, practiced with. He's the founder of this center, and he's often coming up with a short little memorable things. And I've heard him describe wise effort as whatever situation you find yourself in, whatever it might be, whether it's being hangry or whether it's sitting with terrible knee pain or whether it's feeling so much gratitude and appreciation for having the opportunity to have some days to practice or for some of the supportive, beautiful relationships you might have in your life. Whatever situation you might find, wise effort can be summarized as don't make it worse. And if you can, make it better. It's not always available to us to make it better, but don't make it worse. So in this way, we can think about wise effort. There's a number of different aspects to it, in addition to these four: prevent, abandon, cultivate, keep. In addition to this, there's another way we can think about this also is wise effort is about direction. It's about moving away from the unskillful and moving toward the skillful. As best we can. Part of the not making it worse is not falling into a self-critical voice and self-condemnation or whatever it might be. As best we can, to move away from the unskillful and to move toward the skillful. Well, then, of course, this begs the question, what is skillful? what is wholesome? What is helpful? Maybe we can make another broad generalization, a really broad brush. Wait, sometimes it's helpful. I find it helpful to keep things simple and have these broad brush things. I'll get into some of the nitty-gritty and later in the talk, but another broad brush thing we can think about is about what is skillful or what is unskillful, what is wholesome, what is helpful. If we want to move towards greater freedom, if we want to move towards greater ease, if we want to move towards greater peace, it's helpful, it's skillful, as best we can, to move towards letting go, to move towards opening our fists as opposed to often the clinging that's associated with difficulties, the clinging that's associated with suffering. And letting go can be just a tiny small movement, or it can be a really big movement. So the skillful, the wholesome is what helps supports us to let go, to soften, to not be clinging as much. It's also helpful, skillful, beneficial to create the conditions, to do activities, it's helpful to, as best we can, to move towards seeing more clearly. What's really happening? What's the reality of the moment? What's the truth of the moment? These two things go together, seeing more clearly and letting go. But sometimes one aspect is more available than another, is more accessible, is more obvious, is more is easier for us. And I'm going to sprinkle in this idea, as best we can. Sometimes we can fall into this thinking that there's this binary, either I'm completely clinging or I'm completely let go. All of these things are in a spectrum. So can we just move towards letting go? Can we move towards seeing more clearly? In this way, wise effort is about the direction we're going on this spectrum. Notice that when I'm talking about wise effort, I'm talking about a direction. Moving on the end of a spectrum, or moving towards letting go, moving towards seeing more clearly. I haven't mentioned anything about the speed, how fast you have to move in that direction. Wise effort is not concerned with the speed. We know this I could draw an analogy from our daily life, that we may have a place that we want to go. Maybe we want to go to Southern California. We could get there on a freeway. We could drive fast. Maybe we even have cruise control on our car and it's seemingly or a little bit effortless. Maybe we have a self-driving car and it's doing most of the effort and we're zooming along. Most likely we're going south, right? Southern California. That's direction. Something to be learned, driving on a freeway when there's not a lot of effort, when there's some ease. Maybe it's to notice how we still have to pay attention to those things that are everything else that's going along when we're no longer having so concerned with just taking the next step. What else do we have to pay attention to? How fast we're going, what the other cars are doing, which exits to take. We still have to pay attention. There's things to learn. Maybe we drive city streets, taking a lot of stoplights, a lot of pedestrians crossing the street. Maybe if we're in a car that doesn't have very good gas mileage, we have to stop very often and put fuel in. That's okay. As long as we're heading south, we'll still get there. It's okay. Maybe sometimes we're on the freeway, maybe sometimes we're on the city streets. And maybe sometimes we have to take little detours and take care of something. Maybe we stop at a stoplight and like, oh, actually, I think I need to rest here for a little bit. Maybe we just pull over and rest. That's okay. Sometimes we're heading south. It's okay. Maybe we get a little confused and start heading north. And then after a while, we realize, oh, wait. That's right. I wanted to go to Southern California. And as best we can, we go that direction. Maybe it's slow. Maybe going there feels like it's uphill the whole way. Maybe we're carrying a really heavy backpack, have heavy boots on, and it feels arduous and difficult. That's okay. Sometimes that's how the road feels. That's how the path feels. Sometimes that's how our life feels. But can we just be heading south? If that's our intention, our aspiration, to go to Southern California. There's something to be learned. Maybe with going slowly, this feeling of going uphill, maybe we're cultivating some strength, some endurance that we didn't have. Maybe we're seeing things that we couldn't have seen if we were zooming on from the car as an autopilot. Maybe we're meeting people. Maybe we're meeting aspects of ourselves. Maybe we're learning that, wow, this backpack is heavy. Maybe I don't need some of these things in here. Maybe we didn't realize how heavy the backpack was in some of the other situations. So wise effort is about just setting an orientation, setting a direction. And I'll make this gross generalization. There's other ways, but this gross generalization is towards letting go and towards seeing more clearly. And we can apply this in a really small way and in a really big way. So tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about cultivating. How can we cultivate these things that support letting go and support seeing more clearly? There's things that we can do in formal meditation, sitting on a cushion. And there's things that we can do in daily life. Effort is effort. Moving south is moving south. It doesn't have to only be, you know, in a formal meditation, sitting up in a meditation posture. It can be in all areas of our lives. I'll start with, maybe I'll say this. I'll start here. If you wanted to cultivate letting go and seeing things more clearly, I can recommend on a Memorial Day weekend, going to this place called Insight Retreat Center, spending a few days practicing mindfulness, hearing some teachings, sitting on the cushion, walking meditation, sitting meditation, eating meditation. Probably you'll discover that there has been some letting go, maybe small ones, some big ones, this movement towards less clinging. Maybe there's been some seeing more clearly, whether it's things about yourself, things about your experience, things about how you interpret your experience. That's one thing, is to have to cultivate the skillful, is to practice mindfulness, which you have all been doing, which you've all been doing. So mindfulness is the first in another list. For those of you who are familiar with some of the Buddhist teachings, you know there's a lot of lists. For me, I'm a fan of the lists. I like them. I know not everybody is, but I am. So mindfulness is the first in a list of the seven factors of awakening. As the name suggests, there are seven. These are factors that help with awakening. These are things that we can cultivate and can develop, which help support this movement towards greater freedom and greater peace and greater ease. I'm just going to say these seven factors. I'm just going to say them out loud. I'm not going to talk about all of them. I'll talk about just a few here. But you might find maybe there's something there that resonates with you, you have a little zing with it. Might be something interesting there. So I'm just offering this as maybe you're already familiar with this list. Maybe it's new to you. And as I said, I'll speak about a few of these here. So mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And there's a reason why mindfulness is at the beginning of this list. We can think of this list as starting, there's a way in which we can interpret it as starting at the beginning and progressing through. So starting with the mindfulness that you've been doing all these days, you might have noticed, maybe there's, Inez and I have been talking about investigation. What are the sensations in your body? I'll talk a little bit more about this. Energy, maybe you've noticed, I'll talk a little bit more about this too. Maybe you've noticed there's been some joy. Maybe there's been a little bit of happiness, a little bit of contentment, a little bit of well-being. Maybe there's been some tranquility, some softness, some settling down, some concentration, some focus, some equanimity, a little bit of balance of mind, a little bit of ease and openness with what's happening. So in particular, to cultivate seeing more clearly, I'd like to highlight investigation. So investigation is very gently, very softly, just dropping in the question or a gentle inquiry, what's happening? What's happening here? What's going on? What is this? And the question is asked in such a way that it's not about necessarily finding an answer. The answer may arise. It may not arise, but asking the question is a way to kind of connect with your experience. What is this? It's a little bit of like landing on the experience with whatever it might be. What's here? There might be an answer. There might be a sensation you're feeling. Might be a recognition of a thought pattern. Might be an emotion. But this investigation is this gentle inquiry. It's not an archaeological dig. It's just a gentle inquiry. What is this? As a way to help us connect with our experience and maybe understand our experience. But investigation also includes discernment and distinguishing. This question, is this skillful? Is this helpful? Is this wholesome? Am I making it worse? Is this making it worse? Investigation can be a way in which we can just have this gentle inquiry. Am I still heading south if I want to go to Southern California? We can check in with our attitude. Is my attitude making it worse? Is what I'm doing making it worse? Is my attitude making it better, or at least not making it worse? Is my what I'm doing, what I'm contributing, whether it's with my thoughts, the story making, or the physical activity, is this supporting more or less freedom? Is this supporting more or less peace? So investigation has these two qualities of an inquiry of what's happening here. Also this inquiry of this, is it, am I making it worse? Is this helping? Is this helpful? Is it skillful? So something else that we can do to cultivate letting go. In the meditation, like in formal meditation periods, to cultivate letting go, can cultivate loving kindness. Loving kindness practice. Many of you may be really familiar with this. You might have your own loving kindness practice. You might not. But cultivating a softening of our heart can be really skillful. One reason is that if we're able to cultivate loving kindness in a sense that we're able to feel some real warmth, some care, some respect, some goodwill, some benevolence towards others, towards ourselves, that helps promote a sense of ease. It helps promote a sense of well-being. The sense of ease and the sense of well-being makes letting go so much easier. Sometimes we need to feel like there's enough fuel in the tank. We need to feel nourished. We need to feel supported. And loving kindness practice, if we can feel this wish for others to be happy, this wish for ourselves to be happy, can nourish us, can support us, which helps create the conditions in which some letting go can happen. Not only that, if we with a regular practice or a regular experiences of the goodwill, love, care, kindness, benevolence, there can be this genuine confidence that arises, this when we're having this immersion and this feeling. When we recognize that this feeling originates from within us, it's not because we've finally managed to get everything just perfect out there in the external world, which of course we spend a lot of energy trying to do, but loving kindness is a way in which we can support this inner feeling of warmth and care, which can support a sense of well-being. And once we have that experience and learn that this sense of well-being can be independent of what's happening out there, that can give us some sense of ease and confidence that makes letting go so much easier. The big letting goes and the small letting goes. So that's one way in which cultivating loving kindness can be skillful. In which cultivating loving kindness can be helpful. And then, of course, cultivating loving kindness, cultivating goodwill, is the opposite of ill will. Right? You can't have both happening exactly at the same time. Maybe there's some fluttering back and forth, but when there's moments of having goodwill, you're not having moments of ill will. So we're cultivating positive mind states and staying out of trouble, staying out of the ill will. Sometimes we can slip into. The more that we spend time in particular mind states, the easier they become. The more familiar we become with goodwill, the easier it becomes. The easier it is to have that be a response. Maybe it's not our default or initial response, but the easier it is to have access to it, no matter what's happening. It's not always accessible, loving kindness. I don't want to paint it as a panacea for everything. And it's, there may be times in our practice, there may be times in our life when loving kindness just doesn't feel accessible. That's okay. That's okay. With all of these practices, we start where we are. We start where we are. When I teach loving kindness practice, I make the recommendation that we start where it's easiest. Start where it's easiest. For some people, that means they want to cultivate the sense of warmth and goodwill for puppies and kittens and babies and these things where you just naturally or often like smile when you think about them. Start there. And then feel the feeling. What does it feel like to have kind of like that inner smile when you think of kittens, puppies, and babies? And if that's all you did, that would be okay. If you just stayed there. It's about cultivating mind states. It's about gaining familiarity with mind states. You can expand it to include yourself. You can expand it to include those who have helped you and supported you. And you can expand loving kindness, of course, to new people who are neutral that you don't even know. And then when we have some real facility with that, we can include it with those who are difficult for us, that we have difficulty with. My recommendation is to not start where it's the most difficult. There's no reason to start there. The point here is to have experiences of goodwill. So cultivating the skillful can be cultivating loving kindness. Maybe that's all I'll say about loving kindness for now. Those of you who are interested, there's lots of resources on formalized ways in which to do this. Lots of guided meditations and books and probably lots of Dharma talks too. But we can also cultivate the skillful in the daily life, not only just in meditation, not just mindfulness, not just loving kindness. Of course, we can do mindfulness in daily life too. But here's another list. This list is often, not always, but often associated a little bit more with daily life practice. These are called the paramis, which is the Pali word, the word that the Buddhist scriptures are preserved in, the language that the Buddhist scriptures are preserved in. I've seen these most recently translated as supreme supports. I kind of like it. It sounds a little extreme, but I kind of like it. Supreme supports. Most commonly, they're translated as the 10 perfections. That is that if one were, when you become perfectly enlightened, these all become perfected. And the movement is towards perfection with our practice, towards becoming more and more perfect. Nobody really knows what this means, perfect, right? We all, there isn't like this general definition of what this means here. So the paramis here again, I'll just say this list and just notice if there's anything here that, I don't know, catches your attention. There's no requirement to memorize this list, to understand everything here. Just see if there's something here that feels rich for you, or maybe you are familiar with this, maybe it reminds you of something. And then I'll speak a little bit about a few of these. So this list is generosity, ethical behavior, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. So there's 10 in there. You might notice that some of them are the same, in the 7 factors of awakening. So if wise effort is about cultivating the skillful, and we can define skillful about letting go or seeing more clearly, part of letting go, cultivating that movement of the heart, that movement of the mind, the opposite of kind of like holding on really tightly, but instead the kind of movement of letting go, moving in that direction, is the first on that list, generosity. Sometimes when we hear that word generosity, we think about we have to give money. Of course it can be, generosity can be expressed that way, but can we be generous with our time? Can we be generous with our knowledge? Can we be generous by giving others the benefit of the doubt? Instead of attributing malice or attributing some whatever it might be. Like, oh, maybe they don't know something that I know. That's why they're saying this. Or maybe they forgot that. That's why they're saying that. So can we have a generous spirit when we are in conversation with others, when we're thinking about others, when we're talking about others? Generosity is definitely in this movement of letting go. And it's about a practice, right? All this kind of the Buddhist practice, this movement towards greater freedom and greater ease. We don't have to dismiss the small letting goes, thinking that only the big giant ones happen. Just like going to Southern California, taking one step at a time, you will get there. It's just one step at a time. And maybe while you're walking uphill, maybe somebody zooms up next to you and says, hey, actually, I know there's a shortcut over here, and zoom off you go. Right? We don't know. So don't discount, don't diminish, don't ignore all the small little letting goes, these acts of generosity. We're cultivating a movement of the heart. We're cultivating the movement of the mind, a certain direction. And if we wanted to cultivate seeing more clearly, something else that also is skillful and helpful, we can notice those times when it's difficult to be generous. We can investigate, oh, wow, I really do not want to be generous here with my time, with my money, with my resources. I do not want to give this person the benefit of the doubt. These people, the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you can investigate. What am I clinging to? What am I holding on to? Can I see more clearly what's going on? Maybe there's an underlying belief. Maybe there's a feeling of scarcity. Maybe there's a feeling of not having enough. Just recognizing that, that can be the practice. Maybe there is not any generosity. Maybe you're not able to let go. Maybe you're not able to be generous. That's how it is. That's the truth of the moment. But maybe you could see more clearly, oh, yeah, I'm really holding on. It's really painful. It's really difficult, but I can't stop doing it. And this is what's happening right now. I can just see more clearly the reality of the moment. I'm holding on, and holding on feels like this. So in this way, generosity can support both this movement of letting go and seeing more clearly. We can see when this movement of letting go, this generous, is difficult. Maybe the underlying belief is, so we have this idea that I should do this, and a certain type of resentment maybe, or a feeling of rebelliousness, I'm supposed to, and I don't want to, and just notice that. see more clearly what's fueling what's underneath it. It's there's lots and lots of stories of the Buddha talking about generosity, teaching generosity as a starting place. Just this recognition of just noticing that movement of the heart, of the mind, of our intentions. Just this practice of maybe it's small little letting goes. Maybe I also say that being generous in whatever way that we're generous is a way to cultivate and support our social world. Cultivate and support our relationships, our intimate relationships, our work colleagues, even people that we don't know. And cultivating relationships can be enormously supportive for our life and for walking this path. Importance of having good spiritual friends. Good spiritual friend is somebody who helps you walk this path. Maybe they're not an intimate friend. Maybe they're not somebody that you know really closely. But maybe it's somebody who helps you with your meditation practice. Maybe it's somebody that inspires you. So generosity in all kinds of ways helps to support our relationships as well, which can support us, can be skillful. One other quality in this list of 10 of the 10 paramis, the 10 supreme supports, I'd like to talk about here just for a little bit, is this quality of truthfulness. For me, when I was starting my practice, meditation sometimes felt like so hard in so many different ways. Just getting to the cushion on a regular way and being with the difficulties of being on retreats. And so I had learned about the precepts. And we all on that first night undertook the precept to not lie, to not tell, to be truthful. And I thought, you know, I'm going to take this on as a practice. This is something I can do. It felt a little more accessible at the time. And I discovered all these little white lies I was telling so often. Sorry, I'm late. The traffic was really bad. The traffic wasn't bad. I just wasn't organized and didn't get out of the house on time. Sorry, I have to go now. I have another meeting. I didn't have another meeting. I just ran out of energy of talking. Yeah, that was great. No. What I discovered, this turned out to be such a great practice. What I discovered that if I wanted to have this commitment to telling the truth, I had to leave the house on time if I had to be somewhere. I had to find a way in which if I felt like I wanted to get off the phone, to not tell a lie, to say, you know, I'm feeling a little pressed for time, or I'm feeling, it's been great talking with you, and do you have some more you want to say, or do you feel like this is enough, or can we go now, or something. There's different things to say that don't have to be untruths. So we can define a lie, I'll use this word lie. We can define a lie as intentionally misleading others when they are expecting honest communication. So it's people kind of lie when they want others to form beliefs that aren't true. When they want others to, in some ways, not see clearly. So this means that you may say things that aren't true, but you may think that they're true. So you may, it's just, you just don't know, or you may be mistaken, or you forgot or something. So in this way, a lie is about intentionally saying something that intentionally causes others to have a belief that isn't true. So in committing to be honest with everyone, we can commit to avoiding a whole range of long-term problems. But it does mean that we might have some short-term discomfort. We might have to figure out what to say when somebody is asking us something that maybe it would be easier to just tell them what we think they want to hear. Some time ago, I was wearing these pants. I wasn't quite so sure about them. I don't know. So I asked my friend. And my friend is a practitioner. She had, at that time, a lot of experience. This is so stereotypical, right? It's like, what do you think about what I'm wearing? I'm asking my friend. And she says, I asked her, what do you think of these pants? Diana, I've never seen you wear that top before. Have you worn that? No, I'm asking about my pants. That top's a really nice color for you. Oh, I get it. I understood. She didn't have to say anything, right? I understood what she was trying to tell me. It was great. It was so, I have to tell you, my love for her just grew. She found a way in which to communicate that it wasn't awkward, and I understood she was trying to not say about the pants. And I knew that she had a commitment to telling the truth, and I knew that she cared about me. And this was, at the time, what she could think of to say. It was beautiful. I love this person dearly. It is part of the reason why is that I trust her so much that she cared about me and doesn't want to me to have beliefs. They're fine, Diana, when she really didn't think they were so fine. So when somebody asks us opinion about something, it's also appropriate, rather than addressing directly, to address the subtext. It's okay to say something like, you know, I love you no matter what you're wearing. It's okay to address maybe the question that's not being asked. Maybe they're asking a direct one and it feels uncomfortable, or you're not quite sure. Maybe to see what's the question that's not being asked, the subtext underneath it. This commitment to truthfulness is the commitment to seeing things clearly, helping others see things clearly. In some ways, mindfulness is so much about seeing the truth of the moment as best we can. It's to not to remove obfuscation, to not obscure things intentionally. Truthfulness and mindfulness in this practice really go together. I'm not saying this is an easy practice. I'm not saying it will be easy to never tell another white lie. But in some ways, lying, in some ways, it's like a failure of friendship. It's like a refusal to cooperate with others and to help them to see maybe what they can't see, or to support them when they're feeling unsure. And to be sure, I am not saying that we should go around, actually, you do look fat in that dress. We should not be saying that, right? That's not helpful. To not lie is to respect ourselves. To not lie is to respect others. To have a commitment to kindness, have a commitment to care, have a commitment to sensitivity, to others, and to ourselves. And isn't that what mindfulness is also? Sensitivity, a care, a kindness, to just be with what's happening and accepting of what's happening. So in this way, cultivating truthfulness, one of the paramis, can be a way in which can really support our practice, can support seeing clearly, and maybe letting go of people wanting to think that we are only late because the traffic was bad, letting go of wanting people to think that we're organized and can get out of the house on time. So maybe I'll say just a little bit here more about cultivation. How do we cultivate some of these qualities? I've talked about specifically how to do some of these. Mindfulness, come on retreat, have a meditation practice. Some of these are obvious. Loving kindness, you can have a loving kindness meditation practice. Truthfulness, by having a commitment and not telling lies. But what about generosity? We can be generous in spirit, giving people the benefit of the doubt. Be generous when our resources, when we have the opportunity to. But there's a whole list, right, that we haven't gone through. So what are some, in general, some guidelines? How can we cultivate qualities? In general, here's some guidelines. One, notice when these qualities arise naturally. We all have these in some ways. Sometimes there's tranquility. Sometimes there's a sense of calm. Sometimes there's concentration. Sometimes there's focus. Just notice when they arise. How does it feel in the body? How does it feel in the mind? When they just naturally arise, take note of them. The more we become familiar, the more we understand or have the experience of them, the easier it becomes for them to arise, the more likely it becomes that they will arise. So that's the first thing we can do just in general, is just notice when they seemingly spontaneously arise. Just notice. Two, notice the opposite. Notice when there's resistance. Notice when there's, I have this idea, I'm supposed to cultivate quality X, and I really don't want to, or I really can't. Just notice the resistance. Notice that also. And maybe you work with that. Maybe you have some ideas, some beliefs. Maybe there's a sense of should, and maybe there's a sense of rebelliousness, whatever it might be. So that's another way, is to notice what gets in the way. And the third way, be creative. Maybe you is something you want to cultivate in your daily life. Maybe you write a post-it note and put it on the refrigerator on your computer screen. Maybe you tell someone, I really want to work on quality X. I'm going to try some things with you, or let me know when I'm not doing quality X. Or maybe you read some books, talk to some people. Maybe you spend time with individuals that you notice really have a lot of quality X, and just see what they do. Talk to them. Learn from them. Be creative. Explore. Play. And find a way in which it makes sense for you to cultivate the qualities that are skillful, that are helpful, and that are beneficial. Then maybe I'll end with this. I've been talking about cultivating, but then there's keep. This last one of P-A-C-K, keep. When we hear this word keep, there might be this feeling like, okay, keep. I'm going to hold on. I'm going to grab onto it. I'm going to keep it. It's mine. It's mine. You can't have it. But no, the keep is keep on doing what you were doing. Keep on. Keep on letting go. Keep on seeing clearly. Chances are, if you're experiencing a skillful state, having a skillful, beneficial, wholesome state or activity. There was some letting go that was going on. There was some seeing clearly that was going on. So to order and maintain that, keep on letting go. Keep on trying to see clearly. Keep on seeing clearly. Maybe you're letting go of something different. Maybe you're letting go and there's a sense of tranquility. And then there's a sense of like, oh, this is really nice. I want it. Maybe there was a letting go of something that got you into tranquility. In order to stay there, maybe you have to let go of wanting it to be there. Maybe it's something different that needs to be let go. But just keep on letting go. Keep on seeing clearly. This is a way in which you can maintain those skillful states when they do arise, when you have been cultivating them. So wise effort. P-A-C-K. Prevent unskillful, unwholesome, unhelpful. Abandon, if you find yourself in the midst of unskillful, unhelpful, as best you can. As best you can, right? Remember, this is just a movement. It doesn't have to be binary, completely one or the other. See, cultivate. I talked specifically about some things to cultivate, as well as some general ideas about how to cultivate. K, keep, maintain. Just like you can't eat a spear of broccoli on Tuesday and expect to be healthy by Thursday, right? We keep on this movement, this direction that leads to peace, leads to freedom, leads to supreme well-being. Maybe we'll just sit for a minute here. Thank you for your practice and for your attention.